Communication Revolution, this is a forum, and the way forums are usually run around here, at least the ones I've seen, is that our job, Dave Bellas and mine, I'm Dick Connor, is to give you a little background quickly, and then it's yours to start talking about the issues and bringing them up. Wes Preeb was telling me a little bit about Communication Revolution. Tonight I went over to buy some popcorn, and he said, "What are you doing the forum on?" And I said, "Communication Revolution." He said, "Oh, yeah, they got to do something about that. I went out to Chelan and sat down there and watched TV for 4 hours and didn't see a doggone thing. They got to revolutionize that, that's for sure." And I wish he could have come over and told us a little bit more, because he's been out in civilization lately. I had a few ideas about that I could kick out as background information, and I'm going to come at it from the background of technology and some of the issues about that. I'm not sure where Dave's coming from, because we haven't had a chance to talk about this, and that always makes it more fun anyway. I attended a conference last year where the subject was communication revolution and where it was going to happen. It was sponsored by the National Science Foundation and by the Smithsonian, and some of you sat around and we talked about it last year. I've had a year to think about it, though, and I've had some other thoughts. The idea was to look at where this all would end up in about the year 2000. And so we sat together for 3 days. In the morning they would... It was in a Xerox learning center in Virginia, where they had all kinds of closed-circuit TV. They divided us up into 8 groups, and we sat around and in the morning would listen to a panel of experts that would come in and lay out a lot of ideas on us, and then we'd discuss them all day long, and then in the evening we'd all get back together on closed-circuit TV and talk about it. The group I was in, I learned a lot about the technology that's coming, because I was in the sort of the business group. And the guys that were in that group were from corporations like RCA and the RAND Corporation, where they were developing technology and or had already developed it. Some of the people there had been in the invention of television, and I got the advantage of watching and listening to their viewpoint as to where everything was going. They were mostly excited about things like optical fiber and satellites as a way of opening up communications channels to everyone. And they pretty much felt that by the year 2000, and probably long before if society wants to, everybody will have at their disposal communications capabilities that are just really mind-blowing. And there didn't seem to be much doubt that we would be able to have in our homes devices that we can be communicated with, and we can communicate with others anytime all over the world, and also tap into large resources, computer-based libraries, and things like videotape libraries, where you can turn on the machine or whatever it is in your home and reach back into a library for entertainment purposes, like movies, or for educational purposes, and instantaneously be able to draw in any kind of sight and sound and information that's available. We went through all of the business that the knowledge explosion is really going to take off. We've only learned about 10% or some small percentage of all the things we're going to know by the year 2000. And we've got a terrible time ahead of us in trying to manage all that knowledge and use it properly. And we got a lot concerned about that. But we really didn't end up concerned about the revolution in terms of technology, because we thought that would come. The area we really got concerned about as a group, and never did resolve it, were really centered about who was going to control the communication system as this revolution comes about, because it will come about, and is it going to be used for good or for bad? A basic principle that came out of that was that communication equals knowledge, and knowledge equals power, and whoever controls that will have an awful lot of power. We sat around trying to figure out ways that could be, we could develop this thing so it could be used for the largest amount of good without allowing somebody to come into power and take it over. So the big issue was who would be the gatekeepers. That's what they were called, the people that control what information goes into the system and who gets at that information. And there was a lot of thought about how we would make the information and access to the knowledge and communication systems available to those who otherwise wouldn't have it, sort of like the poor. And we were thinking about the food stamp concept in terms of gaining access to knowledge. And so we got into those kinds of issues, but the ones we really worried about and tried to come up with some solutions about were how are we going to keep people from gaining power, because these things are kind of sweeping over us, at least that's the way we felt, And the technology may come at us, and the knowledge may come at us so fast that it may get into the hands of a few people, and they take over society that way. And the other one was, how can we, to prevent that, make it available to everybody, to make sure that everyone has access to it, whether they have the finances or the resources to get it at all. Okay, that's a little bit of background. And I'll stop there, Dave, and maybe you'd like to take off from there.
My background has involved computers, but maybe my orientation is a little bit different. I am an engineer, but lately I think I've been more concerned about the limitations of technology, because I see technology as a way of approaching things and a way of seeing things and talking about things. But in many ways, it's a very narrow way. And I do see that who could be controlled may not be so much as what controls, because technology may end up controlling. Rather than being a tool, it may end up controlling us. And I'd like to just try and illustrate that a little bit by how words get changed to suit the technology. For example, the word communication to me is related to the word commune, and a commune is kind of a very intimate kind of personal exchange that one has. And it's related to the word community, which is, again, something that you experience probably here at Holden Village, probably more than you experience at other places. It implies both commune and community imply dialogue, a sharing of oneself with someone else. But the problem I see with technology is personal sharing doesn't fit into the technological way of thinking, at least as we experience it as people. And so the word tends to get changed. And communication, or the advance in communication, gets changed to something like the speed and efficiency of information transfer, which is a lot different to me than communication in the fullest sense, certainly communication as we experience it here. Now, there's a real danger in the changing of the meaning of a word, because then what happens is the change in the word then almost defines the success of the technological innovation. In other words, technology as a way of speaking and thinking defines its own success. And so that means that we as people have got to really watch out how we use our words. And we have to make sure that we use them in a way that really fits our own experiences as people, because that's the only way that we won't get technology telling us what the word is, and then as soon as technology tells us what the word is, then technology says, well, obviously, we've been a success because we can, because of communication, have a higher speed and efficiency of information transfer. Now, if we look at our own experiences, I'm not sure that we have had an advance in communication. And I'd like some of you to maybe discuss that. For example, we have people spending an average of something like 7 hours a day watching television, communicating to a non-existent person. Most of these people are people, yes, but they're actors. They're playing roles. And they're communicating in a way that is strictly monologue. I mean, you may have a person smiling on the television tube and telling jokes, and someone comes into your house and starts beating you up, and they're still smiling on that television tube. That's the kind of monologue communication that you can have. Up at Holden, I think there's kind of a contrast where the communication seems to increase because we've kept the technology out. Somehow, I think if they put televisions in our rooms, I think that would somehow destroy some of the things that we have at Holden Village. So I think, and also I'd add, those of you who went to Herb Brokering's presentation, I cannot imagine how computers and television could increase the communication that Herb Brokering had. That would defy any kind of programming that I'm aware of. So we have to watch out about the change of the words, the meanings. And what happens is the word that we use gets changed to fit the technological way of doing things, and then that defines the success of technology. Another example of a word that gets changed is personal. We make things more personal. And again, I'll use a past experience rather than pointing to the future. When television first came out, it didn't seem very personal because another camera would go on and the person would be kind of looking over your shoulder as they were talking to you, because the person didn't know which camera was on. And so it looked kind of strange. And so then, in order to make the television more personal, they put a little red light on the camera that was on, so that when you were on television and you saw the red light go off over there and on over there, you would transfer your eye contact over to the other camera. Now, of course, that made it seem more personal, but you still can't get around it. You were still communicating with a red light and a TV camera. So I'd say that one of the dangers we face in this communication revolution is that the words are actually going to be changed, and technology will take over the meaning of the words and define to us the meaning of the words, and we will be stuck with those words and then say, yes, I guess we have had a communication revolution, but I still feel kind of lonely. That's a danger. Now, in order to maybe put a few checks on this, I'd like to suggest maybe a test that we could have of this new technology. It seems to me that if the new technology is so tremendous, that we ought to see if the industries themselves use this to promote more communication. I'll give you one example. I've noticed, I've been in a lot of large office buildings, I've been in some, and I've noticed that they're building up all over the place, large office buildings, and we do find that what they do in those office buildings is kind of transfer information. So it seems to me that the technology would work very well within one of those office buildings, much better than it would within our home, because they deal with a much more specific kind of information. Now, if they had this communications, why build these big office buildings? Why not just separate those people into little houses right within the neighborhoods of each and every, one of us, and just have them in 15 people over in here in a little house right in your neighborhood where they could walk to and from work. And instead of having one office building, we could just have little neighborhood little shops scattered all across the country with this communication network, and they could operate just pretty much the same way as though they were in a big office building. That would, of course, help solve the energy crisis. People wouldn't have to drive to and from work. You could live in a preserved neighborhood concept, preserved neighborhood identities. And we could do a lot of that could truly improve communication. Now, if I don't see the large institutions actually using it that way themselves, then I would be a little suspicious about the benefit of us using it in our homes, because with time it'll become like the automobile. We'll be using it because that might be the only way that we have to interact with society, such as shopping and so forth. So anyhow, I'd like to maybe I've talked too much. I want to just summarize a little bit. I'm afraid that the technology, particularly communication technology, will redefine words to define its own success. And I suggest that if it is going to really benefit us, I'd like to put some tests on the institutions themselves, the large industries themselves, on how they might be able to use that themselves to make a more personable human environment which we live in, rather than maybe each one of us having one of these and, say, shopping through television and a number of other things. Okay, I'd like to open it up for discussion unless you have some things back.
Same thing, right.
Okay, open. Silence. No communication.
Long pause, no? Long pauses are good.
Honestly, not too long. Yes?
I was wondering about the NSF Institute you were at. Did they say there would be much of a role for the function for reading and writing as a communications medium by the year 2000? Would it still be there, be gone?
That didn't come up. Well, I'd have to guess that it would. I still think it would be symbolic, a lot of it. It's going to be the cheapest form of communication anyway, probably. But that's so hard to tell. It's hard to tell. The way the systems that work now pretty much are that way. There's a lot of message switching and a lot of interactive. I'm involved in one right now, which has all interactive, word-wise. It's all type. We have a computer terminal in our home. It's hooked to a system that maybe has 500 other terminals hooked to it. And it's something that anybody can use. The kids use it, I use it, we all communicate with everybody else on the system. and it's located all over the country. There are people in California and Delaware and Houston, Texas, and Canada, and Illinois, all over. And it's used by adults and it's used by kids, and so we're getting a dose of how that feels right now, how you can have conferences. My daughter comes home after school, and she immediately calls up friends of hers around the country, and five of them can get online at the same time. They split the television screen into five parts, and so each one of those five kids can type, and simultaneously on all of their screens what they're typing will appear. And so they sit there and they gossip. Right now it's used primarily for gossip. They come home and say how things are going. I'll come home and I want to talk to somebody, and I'll call up to see if they're on the system. And if they aren't there, then I'll leave them a note and say, tell them what I want to tell them. When they turn on their terminal, there's a little thing will pop in and say there's a note waiting for you, and then they'll read the note and they'll write me a note. We can have a meeting over a period of time and never do it in real time. We can always do it offline or non-real time. I do this all the time. When I travel and I go someplace like Washington or Baltimore or Philadelphia and I get to a terminal, I want to tell my wife something, I'll call her up, and if she's not home, I'll just leave her a note. And she'll know that there's something I want to talk to her about. Beginning to get the feeling for the kind of thing you were just talking about, Dave, and businesses or business institutions are getting very interested and have taken formal approaches to utilizing these things to get away from the huge costs of travel and the problems of energy that are coming. Our company has done several very, very large and formal studies and are beginning to develop patterns of behavior of our employees that will eventually lead to conferencing and meeting with people around the world without having to actually travel, because we know that in a few years that's really going to be prohibitive. It's getting to be more and more so now. So that's coming. I don't know if it's going to come fast enough. We're promoting it because we've got computers and that's a good idea for business, but a lot of other people are too. All the major corporations that I work with are doing that, are studying it and beginning to try it out. But it's just in its embryonic form. About 10 years ago, the idea of message switching came along, where you just make sure that messages are optimally switched and handled, and you make sure that messages got to people. That's sort of like the telephone or the telegraph company. But now, the devices are getting to be inexpensive enough and capable enough for us to communicate either online or in non-real time. And it's all now in written, and it'll be in type written form for a long time because of the expense involved. It'll be 10 years. It depends. You know, you never know. If a society wants to invest a lot of money in 5 years, 3 years, but I don't think they will yet, unless the defense establishment gets involved, and they may pour some money into it, then it'll come a lot faster. That's a sort of a roundabout answer to your question. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
I get feelings of isolation and thinking of something like this, and I mean, oh gosh, you can stay home in bed, never get out of your house, because, I mean, as it is, sometimes you can call up the person across the street instead of going to see them. And just, I mean, I just have visions of how you can be totally isolated, stay in your cubicle, and, you know, have hardly any real interaction, lose the physicalness in a lot of relationships.
Sometimes that's good. Some people that... I've seen a couple of cases of people who are absolutely antisocial, and the only way they can communicate is through this medium. I've got a slide presentation I showed this morning, which I'll show again sometime later this week, that shows the reaction of some young kids who are juvenile delinquents and are incarcerated, and their reaction to this. And they absolutely rejected adults, particularly adults, but almost everybody. But when they get involved with something that's impersonal like a machine, they begin to communicate with other people. And in fact, it improved their social behavior immensely. In many cases. But I'm afraid of that too. As I was listening to Dave talk, I thought, I don't want to stay home. I won't get out of there and go somewhere else. Yeah.
I don't think, you know, this is going to eliminate the personal communication, but I think it gives us an option.
Yeah.
A lot of the nuisance communication, like, you know, you push a button and all your bills are paid for the month. And, you know, that sort of thing.
But you're going to have to print the money. Yeah.
So the nuisance communication you can get rid of, and I think it'll make a lot of other forms of communication available that we don't even think of now. Like Seattle Public Library just started now a service free to patrons where they tap into this data bank of the New York Times, and maybe some of you aren't aware that every article that is published in the New York Times is abstracted and put into a computer with something like within 3 days of when it appears in print. And it goes back, what, about 10 years now? They have, eventually they want to create, ever since the Times was published, right now it goes back about 10 years. So if you want to know about, you know, plays on, you know, Tanzanian natives written by German playwrights in France in the 1800s, right now you can call up the Seattle Public Library and they'll type that into a computer terminal and say, tell us everything the New York Times has written about this subject, and it prints out right in front of them on a little piece of paper. Now, this is information that most of us, you know, just thinking our own frame of reference within our daily job and our home, don't even think of. But once it becomes available, you know, within 6 months, you'll wonder how you ever live without it. So I think this is, you know, going to be the big impact of the communications revolution. It's an impact that we can't even imagine because we don't know, you know, we can't fathom what it's going to allow us to do.
Isn't that the problem almost, though, that you're going to become so dependent on it? So that's the whole thing. And then every time this stuff breaks down, what are you going to do then? And who's going to fix the computers? And then how do you maintain this ability to communicate with people? What Dick mentioned, is that the symptom or the cause of why these people no longer can communicate? Maybe they grew up doing nothing but watching television and the one-way communication channel and they never became comfortable communicating with real life people in other kinds of situations. I don't know which of those it is, but it could be either. And I think it's, you know, it's really...
That maybe brings out one of the major issues. Television could have been used for good or bad, and I think most people think it was used for bad.
And
most everybody does.
Media is not good or bad, but maybe you have to analyze things like Marshall McLuhan did.
Yeah.
I don't know him very well, but in terms of, is that the kind of a media, does that kind of media communication promote other values that you...
And are the people that make the decisions about how it's going to be used the people that appropriately can make the social judgments involved? With television, it apparently wasn't. And all these new things that are coming at us are hard. They're hard to realize, but you can look ahead, and a lot of people are. The system that I described to you that I'm using, we've got a study going with about 40 different people like McLuhan, who are trying to figure out what it's going to do to society if it's used one way or another. The guys that are doing this use the parallel of the automobile, which you probably have heard before, that when they invented that thing, they thought that all it was going to do was haul people around. They didn't realize that it was going to go through four or five social gyrations and cause massive social change and population shifts and all that other stuff. You know, people are trying to predict what these things are going to do, and I think they'll do a good enough job so that we may have time to get a hold of the thing and push it in the right direction.
Now we're dependent on the automobile.
Yeah,
and television. We cannot get away from it if we would like to.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
You're trying to tell me that all these fast talkers got to learn to be fast typers?
For a while. Although they've got devices now that are going to be working pretty well. That's where you just talk at it and it understands what you're saying. I've seen them work. They do work now. They're just terribly expensive. But in 5-10 years, they won't be. And then there, you won't have to be using typing then again. You can just talk at the machine.
Correct the grammar.
Yeah, it'll tell you back if you said something wrong, right?
About all the every other you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, it'll make you a smooth talker. You can just talk into it, and it'll change it into a, yeah, right. I don't know.
What is being done to try and control or limit the, what did you call them, the people?
The gatekeepers?
Yeah.
Well, there's some congressional studies going on that I'm aware of. I think the National Science Foundation obviously is studying it. That's one of the really scared them. They didn't think that businessmen would get so worried about that. We really got alarmed. We got all shook up. They thought that the people in government would get alarmed, and they weren't alarmed about it, but we were. But maybe we're more used to watching power in politics and stuff. We figured politicians would take that over and wipe everybody out or something. Maybe not that bad. But we got nervous. But the Congress is studying it. And several senators have got some strong stuff going, but that's all I know about. Maybe the Library of Congress.
You know, the thing I'm kind of afraid of too is that there is sort of that. There's one is the marketing factor of the people that make the hardware.
Yeah.
So they're promoting.
Oh yeah, and they'll promote the use
of it, which, you know, by advertising and other techniques, they create the need for things that maybe are not otherwise there. On the other hand. People, I hate to say that, maybe that's giving away some of my own, that people are selfish to a degree underneath, you know, that egocentric, we said that this morning,
and they're going to promote things strictly in their own personal self-interest mm-hmm. in terms of how they use things. And the thought, the example that comes to my mind is the CB radio business, you know, and how on the one hand it's obviously a great idea for emergency situations for varieties of people, whether they state patrol or whatever, but what's happened to it so that every Tom, Dick, and Harry has to have a CB radio as a toy in his car, then now they don't have enough frequencies to use in more legitimate situations. I mean, sure, you can plan for anyone can have a breakdown on the road out in the middle of nowhere, but does that justify that everybody should have a CB radio and then there are no longer frequencies available for other users?
I've been using a CB lately, just on the trip out here, and I began to listen to all these characters and began to think about the system I'm using and the systems that are coming. I wonder, there seems to be a real need on the part of a lot of people to communicate that way, communicate with somebody and wander around and find things on that are going on, and you can do this with these systems. There aren't enough channels, I guess. I don't know much about it, but there are going to be plenty of channels when they get the technology, the laser, not the laser, but the optical fiber, which is partially laser. There are going to be so many channels and so cheap to communicate. The people,
but is that a real need?
I don't know. I'm just wondering.
Is it an artificially created?
I don't know.
Need?
I don't know.
Joyce.
Fibers?
Yeah.
No, they.
The problem with the CBs, we've talked a lot about this because they interrupt the stereo frequencies in our community so that people in town can't listen to, you know, a station. And they started listening to the conversation. And one of the things that came up was that you can talk anonymously and tell all kinds of things and hang up.
Right.
You know, and there's no accountability, and there's no feedback, and there's no responsibility in what you say.
That's right.
And there's a lot of things happening on those frequencies, and that's really frightening to me because my hunch is that that's how the people view themselves interacting in humanity, and that really bothers me to encourage and nourish that kind of communication.
The communication goes to the point too of not even using their own name, where every person mm-hmm. has their own so-called handle they want to be known as, and they are truly anonymous.
See, this is one of the technological ways of doing things, is your objectivity. You're detached.
Mm-hmm.
This becomes how I said technology was a way of doing things, you see. And what happens is this way of doing things becomes ingrained as technology takes over. And one of the ways of communicating in technology is, of course, in science, of course, is you're the detached observer. Your personal part is not part of it. This is what is taught to you in technological education. But I'd like to go back to the concept of need. And in terms of technological needs, I don't think you have to worry that, because I think they're going to solve a lot of those technological needs. But, you know, that, for example, getting more channels. I think that's something that can be solved. But the problem is that our needs are largely created by the technology that we've developed to solve other needs. The automobile being an example. And it goes into exactly what you were saying, is individuals pick it because it can help them out in their environment. Take the automobile. We each say, well, if I have an automobile, I can save time traveling. Okay? Well, everybody does that. And then you have to move farther out because now we have so many cars. And the end result of us all doing this is that we spend, I believe, about 3 times as much time in day-to-day necessary traveling as a nomadic society does. We spend more time traveling than anyone ever has. We say, well, we travel a lot faster. We'll buy a car, we can go faster. Well, if you take really how much time we spend and do a little experiment, you take the distance you travel in a car and you divide it by the total time. Total time you spend looking for parking and driving the car, getting it serviced, and working to support the car, and you come out with about 5 miles an hour. Okay, so the car really hasn't speeded us up a lot. And what's happened now is, however, is that we need the car, you see. We need it. We can't get along without it because we've changed the environment to take care of the car. And I guess it was maybe Buckminster Fuller or somebody said that if a Martian came down here to one of our cities, they would try to communicate with the automobile because they would see that the people were serving the automobile and they would assume that the people were the slaves of the automobile. So if there are any Martians, I'd like their opinion. Yeah. Right, over here.
I understand in Minnesota there's this organization, the Amish, who are completely getting away from automobiles and all mechanized equipment.
They always have.
Is that growing?
No, it's shrinking, I think. I think that they're losing that. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. It seems like with all this instantaneous knowledge, would be a culture that will be even more on a head trip. And almost quadriplegic.
Yeah.
It's less on the physical, you mean?
Yeah.
Both on the physical, the rest of the physical body, but also the emotional thing. I'm worried about the emotional detachment when all you do professionally is relate to other people as a technological robot, conveying this technological information. You never get to meet your colleagues, whether they're their scientists or businessmen or whatever. I mean, you may not ever get to know them as whatever.
That really, when I think about that.
Really divorce those parts of your life, and I think that's a lot of what's behind.
Well, the reason that we travel now is so we can get together and bargain, and you can't bargain at a distance. You got to sit down and look somebody eyeball to eyeball, and deal with people personally. And I don't know how I don't think technology can replace that. That's one of the puzzling things in my life.
If you grow up without it, though, you won't need that.
If you what?
If you grow up without it.
Well, I don't know if that's the cart or the horse. There's just so many personal vibes that you get when you just got to get together and sit down and talk about it.
Because you've grown up needing.
Maybe
to
that's
get
true. I don't know. But it sure is a way of life and business.
We can send our children away to school, and then we can talk to them once a week, once a day. We can communicate with them on this
thing. Oh, yeah.
And then the children...
It's a whole different problem.
Send our children away to get programmed.
Yeah.
And then they'll be really ingrained in it, and they can carry on the world and the life with us, so they don't need that.
Yes. Yeah, it may be a habit that we just feel like we have to get on a plane and jump and go somewhere and fly to New York and meet with a guy just to sit down and talk to him about what he's doing, because you can't tell about it over the phone. But we sure have that as ingrained.
You can get back to that as this right brain, left brain business. It's still multitasking, you know?
Sure.
As a person, you have feelings, and you're never going to be able to divorce yourself from that and fulfilling those as needs. And I think it's ludicrous. And you carry that to its logical conclusion, like you said this morning. It isn't going to work, in my opinion.
Have you given much thought to the idea that communications revolution might render obsolete such things as Holden, the church, the community in our lives?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, after all, I mean, a revolution is an abrupt change in direction in some way.
I'm afraid that a lot of the good values and things we're losing them now. I mean, Holden is sort of rare right now, and I don't think these kind of situations used to be that rare years ago.
If we would look back 100 years before, or a little more, before the time of the wireless, which was really the beginning of this communications revolution, what was the situation as far as communication was concerned? Wasn't this kind of a gathering a very common event? Isn't this kind of a gathering a common event today?
Really? What is it? You can take it back one step further before the printing press.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was wondering.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
But what has happened then in the meantime?
Yeah.
Well, did it go then from an oral communication to a written visual one with the printing press, and then the others brought in a different kind of faster oral thing with the wireless, and now you're kind of in the telephone then later, but now you're getting into combining those. So you're going to put a visual and an auditory together in the same, I think.
Right.
That's what you're
that's
talking
right.
about.
That's right.
And I don't know what that'll do.
Well, we do have no problem with it. When you dial a somebody on the telephone and you get a phone name. Think of how an answering it, a telephone answering mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It was a program message. Think of how you feel and how much difficulty you have in giving a message over one of those crazy things, and just the feelings inside of you with this mechanical recording, you know.
That doesn't bother you though, because you use it all the time.
No, I won't use a phone mate. No, if I get that on the other end, I hang up.
Well,
I don't know. I don't like that.
Not far off from what you were talking about, but it's a written message.
Oh, that's different. That's a different kind of thing. Oh, well, let me see. Psychologically, it's different to me. If I hear a voice on the other end that says, you know, just hang, just a minute and record. I don't like that.
What is it that you're getting? You're getting nothing, aren't you?
Oh, I type in a note. It's just like a letter. It's like I leave a letter for
like
the
a letter.
Yeah, we call it a mailbox. You see, I type a little letter for him. Maybe I have an old tribal instinct. I don't like to leave my voice recorded somewhere. So I'm not sure. giving a piece of yourself away. Yeah.
But see, what would you feel if you could leave this visual end rather than write the message? You just, the thing would photograph you giving the message, you see, so that then your other person come in an hour later and plug the button, and then they see this little videotape recording of you giving them the message.
You know, that really hasn't worked very well. I don't know how I'd react. I've done some computer, television conferencing, and that's not very exciting either. Nobody likes that, and the telephone company's been pushing this telephone video type of thing, and it's just not exciting at all. No one's going for it.
We tried recently one of those five-way phone conversation things, and it was a disaster because everybody started talking at the same time, and didn't know who you were talking to on the other end, and it was kind of a farce after a while.
They can be handy if you do it just right, but you sure have to handle it.
Well, yeah, you have to blend yourself to the technology.
There's a learning process.
Well, I'm thinking of just what has happened in the art of letter writing. And I know any time I read letters that were written, say, for instance, Revolutionary Time, and on the letters that people wrote to one another, they were beautiful and they contained a beautiful lot. And what are the letters like that we write now, even when I write to our children? I don't have time to expound gloriously the way they used to write, and our communication has simmered down and be very simple. I wonder how many people here, when they write a letter, really write a great, big, beautiful letter.
Don't write anymore, I got a telephone.
Yeah. There's a question of a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And that, I think, generally means someone who protects us from something that's destructive. There's another issue at that point, and what I've sensed is the problem we have in our society of using something for the upbuilding, the building of our community. An example of that, I was working in family life education and wanted films, and I had great difficulty finding films made in this country. In Canada, they have a group called the Canadian, or the Film Board of Canada, who made films that were dedicated to the upbuilding of life in Canada. They produced many beautiful films. And why we didn't have anything comparable in this country, the only ones producing films were those who did it commercially, and they would wait until there was some big symptom that the government would pour money into. So all of once we get a whole bunch of films on drugs, and a whole bunch of films on alcoholism, and then a whole bunch of films on BD, and no one sitting back and saying, what's needed to help build up family life in a broad sense, a very narrow approach to it. So I'm concerned that we not only raise the question of what would be destructive, but what could build. Mm-hmm. And then the other side of that question, has television had a detrimental effect on the quality of our life in America? If that has, then that's a forewarning of what we're in for.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we can't have a gatekeeper for television to protect our morals, quote unquote, how can we have a gatekeeper to censor what comes in over this?
I'm really pessimistic about the possibilities of that happening based on personal experience. You know, the question I just wrote down is, will technology lead us, or will we lead technology? I spent almost 2 years going around talking primarily to political leaders, although they were educational leaders, but they're really politicians, trying to get them interested in this technological thing that's coming at them. They've got to deal with it, and they refuse to deal with it. And they've got all kinds of legitimate reasons for not dealing with it. And it may be the system, not the people. I think it is. But after 2 years, I was very disappointed. Because nobody was interested in dealing with the issues that we're talking about right here. When the people that are elected or appointed to make those decisions, so far, I don't think, are doing much about it. and maybe because they have too many other issues to deal with. One of the problems is that, for instance, the education system is falling apart and has so many problems they don't want to think about, or they can't think about anything new because they've got so many other problems to solve. Their minds are saturated with their own problems. But that poses a real problem for us. If the leaders that are dealing with these things, and or should be, aren't, then what can we do about it? I really don't know.
Yes.
I remember reading that that children will die if they are not handled and caressed in hospitals or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm sure Dale would agree that the family structure has broken down a lot in recent years with television or with the modern technology. And I wonder if we are really, really going to be paying a big price for more technology that will separate us from the touchy-feely existence that all of us need, the personal touch, the communication of one person to another in face-to-face contact.
Yes.
But don't you think maybe motivation is something, but maybe why some of these family ties have disintegrated and have gone down may not be so much by technology as maybe a lot of people just don't want to be bothered anymore. I mean, I don't think you can have any solid communication or family ties or ties anyone without sufficient motivation. That you have to want it. Both parties, all parties.
Well, I think that's because of television. You know, you can get in front of the TV with my kids, and they'll sit there in TV. Well, let's go someplace. No, I don't want to go. They're happy. They're fascinated by this picture in front of them, and they don't want to do anything. They don't want to have anything to do with the rest of them. I had a friend told me he had a son that didn't want to go to the beach. They hadn't been to the beach in 2 years, and it was on a Saturday morning. He didn't want to go because the cartoons were on at that time. So it
you could not have a TV.
Yeah, you have the choice.
Yeah.
Well, we've made that choice.
Yeah. Well,
the influence of
the neighbors. Is the TV the reason or is it the excuse? Because quite often children may not wish to communicate, and the TV is handy. It's something to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They don't want to get involved because they want to be by themselves, and this thing has got a hold of them.
It does have a seductive effect.
Did we forget the polywogs?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Lord's Prayer does say, lead us not into temptation. Yes?
Couple of comments. One, I feel I adequately solved the TV problem. It cost me 75 cents. That was for a little padlock, a little tiny one that I put through the prongs on the end of the plug. And the kid, I did it early one Saturday morning and then left the house, and I came back and my wife was tearing her hair because she said the kids just threw tantrums, you know, and I left her to cope with it. By the time I got back, the kids, you know, when I came back, here were the kids outside playing in the yard, and, you know, it was just fine. And really, it's all that. I left the lock on, and then gradually I'd forget to put it back after a football game or something like that.
Yeah.
And,
well,
once or twice a week, they could come with a special program, and, you know, we'd unlock it for that. Well, I gradually forgot to relock it, but, it's been about a year now, and it's never been a problem.
We did the same thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't talk to you about it either. So
it's great life.
Yeah, except that my kid figured out how to break it. He worked his own plug, you know, and somehow. So I had to figure out how to stop him from doing that.
Yeah, I went through two locks.
Yeah, right. But it really worked beautifully. But we had to resort to that. We tried to not do that, you know, just say, we're not going to have the TV set on. But every time you turn around, they got it on. And it took quite a bit of discipline. It was hard for me, too. It was hard for me to go and say, geez, I'm just
tired. We've got a TV set that's hard to find parts for.
this whole thing, this whole thing sounds rather strange, though, because everyone seems to agree there has been a tremendous advance in communication, and now people are offering advice on how to escape from it.
Well, how to
control
it.
And so
control.
What does the word advance in communication mean then? That's what I'm getting at. What is, you know, because I mean that changes our whole way of thinking. And how could there be an advance and then we offer advice on how to avoid it?
What does an advance mean?
What does that mean? And this is what I'm getting at, is that the change of concept of communication, the word itself is changing because of the technology. And I think here at Holden we've appreciated communication in a broader sense. And so we see this advance in communication more as a threat, and so we say, well, here's how you can lock up your TV, or don't get one. Well, then, what does advance in communication mean?
The change of communication, I'm going to go back to the printer.
Well, then, what does advance in communication mean?
The change of communication, I'm going to go back to the printer.
But the word itself, you can't just focus upon the objects of technology. You can't just focus upon the television. You have to realize that technology, most fundamentally, is a way of thinking and a way of approaching problems. I mean, this is, and what happens is that way of thinking actually starts changing in our own heads, and the words change, and so we find that when we communicate, the word communication itself means something different over time. Yes, Jerry.
Oh, I haven't got my question framed right yet.
We can go, okay. Yeah. Wait, but let me, back there.
What is communication? Is it not an understanding that's produced? You can be given knowledge, but unless you're able to interpret that knowledge, then nothing is really communicated to you. And I think that sometimes with the technical communication, with the TV, our children watch it, and they build up in their own mind certain ideas. If the parents sit there and watch it with them, the communication from the TV or the technology, whatever they're getting the communication from, can be clarified. Because the child does not have to imagine or misinterpret what's happening. And I think that a lot of times this is what TV and radio and whatever does, if the parent or if some other person isn't there to help interpret what's happening.
Dave?
Yes?
May I suggest, I think we're missing a point here, or a facet. We're not talking about ethics and morals. When we talk about the advance in communication, we're thinking of the mechanics of this thing. And we're not thinking of the moral or ethical responsibility which parents have for the control of the TV in this training of the child, in the pushing of the polywog back into the mainstream. And I think this whole thing is being reflected in our society today in the actions of the Supreme Court, in the actions of the Congress, and the actions of our legislatures, in the moral structuring or deterioration that's going on within the country. And we're struggling with windmills over here and forgetting the basic issues.
What are you saying the basic issues are,
though? I think the basic issues lie in the ethical and the moral realm rather than the mechanics and mechanical involvements with toys.
Well, I do too. I really do. Well, I think it's the ethics.
You're separating them a little too closely. I think Jacques Ellul is a French philosopher who's a Christian who has written on the ethical questions, and his concern is that technology, or technique as he calls it, takes over the ethics, it takes over the morals, it takes over that as a way of thinking. So simply trying to figure out how to deal with this becomes very difficult, because with time we begin to communicate and figure out things more in the technological way. And there are some things that just don't fit in the technological way of thinking. So what appears as gadgets, there's more behind it than gadgets. There's the concept behind it. You simply don't go to another society, for example, and give them machinery. You have to give them a way of thinking so that they can operate and run that machinery. And as you become ingrained in that kind of environment, our own ways of thinking do change. And I think our change in our morals and our ethics reflect that change in the way of thinking. So I agree with you that it is an ethical question, but it's tied in with the whole technological concern. In the back, yeah.
Of
question of technology being blamed for these things, but what we see is an advance in technology that then can become misused by people who see it as an avenue to satisfy their own particular desires. Whether those are good or bad depends on the individual and how they use that particular technology. Taking television as an example, companies saw that as a very quick way to exploit products because of the influence that it has on people watching. But the vehicle itself, television, is not able. It's fun when people use it.
I'd like to hear your response, but I want to put something in the middle, if I might. I think what he's saying is that it isn't they, but it's we. The company saw that it was useful for them, and we see that it's useful for us. For instance, in structuring time, in sort of getting our little entertainment candy, you know, for the night or the week or whatever. And so everybody's sort of getting their own. So the presence of the television itself does change things. It's not a question of saying is it good or evil. It is. And we're involved in it.
Yeah.
And that colors everything we think.
Right.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I am saying that. I mean, and I think as Alou would say, technique takes over. It takes over. And it becomes its own master. He's not just talking about gadgets. He's talking about technique, the way of producing gadgets and operating gadgets. You get into the pattern of operating them, designing them, deciding certain ways, and that takes over. That way takes over. I mean, give one example. I've been involved in some public hearings on land use planning. And so what do we talk about in land use planning? Well, very technological kinds of things, the slope of the land, where the sewers are going to be. But if someone in that public meeting stood up and said, one of the concerns is I'm lonely, certainly that has to do with how we structure our communities, what would happen? If people look at it and say, well, gee, you got a problem, they'd be embarrassed. Because, see, loneliness is not accommodated. That feeling is feelings in a technological way are not considered to be appropriate things, you know, that's something else. And so we don't talk about those in our collective decisions. That's one way that I think the technological way of thinking does take over. Over here.
I think there's another issue here, and that, from a sociological point of view, raises the question about the influence of communication as an institution,
mm-hmm.
as it relates to our value systems. And I think all of us reflect in our own behavior, what we wear, what we eat, what we value, the consequence of being told subtly and not so subtly across the years by radio, by television, by those who are the gatekeepers. And as a consequence, you see, we are controlled in a sense. Now, there's a fellow who's the head of the Annenberg School of Communication, for example, at the University of Pennsylvania by the name of Gerdner, who talks about this as being the hidden curriculum, which it really is.
Okay.
And it seems to me the fundamental issue is not the good or evil of technology per se. See, that is the organization to solve the problem. But it's the utilization of it. And whether we have gotten our values straight in terms of what we want it to do for us. And I'm not so certain we sit down and seriously sort out what we think it ought to do for us. And it would be interesting to ask this group, for example, if you looked simply at technology and its possibilities, that is, its ability to communicate more readily, give you access to more information, to transport you more quickly, and so on, what do you want it to do for you? You see, we've had a lot of examples of what we don't like, and we're here because we're interested in being more human.
We pointed out a lot of the bad features of television, as you say, but what is the objection to Sesame Street, which I understand is a very good training and educational program for children, as an example?
How about Roots?
It's very effective in terms of what it intends to do. To train them in these skills.
Even the public relation, any public relation firm will tell you how good television is, because they can tell you just what you think, what you do, every day, and this is their selling point to their advertisers.
But how do we prevent ourselves from fiber optics giving us 100 times more garbage?
Right.
That's the way. That's. In fact.
I wanted to react again to what Dave was saying earlier about how the technology in the thoughts and the words influences. Because the word advance, I'm still hung up on this thing, and in terms of advance in technology, and what I was thinking of, if you allow your mind to just really wander, and there are other ways to communicate besides technological ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the two examples that readily come to mind are the one that someone mentioned earlier today about the pygmies. And that ability to communicate when these people were coming on another sense level that had nothing to do with technology. It had to do with their own body's ability to hear. And another one that came to mind was when I was reading about the Australian Aborigines and how they have this, I guess the best word we know to describe it is like ESP, with nature. And that they just have this ability to communicate with their whole environment so that if an animal is 5 miles away going by, they know he's there. And they can, literally go to meet him to catch him for their dinner or throw a boomerang out. In fact, that's how they developed those things. And it was completely on an abstraction, which we are not able to even understand because it's communication in a completely different sphere than any of us are used to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that an advance? If we could learn as a people, as a culture, to do what they've done for, eons, would that be an advance or is that a step backwards? So I agree that the word is very seductive in a degree, in the way of saying it's got to breed more technology.
What would probably happen is that whole form of communication would be considered kind of ridiculous. Because it doesn't fit the technological way of thinking.
Okay,
and so we'd say, oh, Aborigines, of course, and if you wanted to say you were going to present that at a professional meeting,
right,
in your profession,
right,
I mean, you'd be scared stiff to do something
you're
like
right.
that. Because, I mean, you would. I mean, in a place like Holden, you can kind of say those things.
Yeah,
but
right.
If you go into a community where you're talking in public without a group like this, you get scared to say something like that seriously. Why? Because it doesn't fit into the pattern of thinking, the appropriate pattern of thinking.
Okay. Back of the room.
This question that came up a minute ago and there was no response to, how many of you think Sesame Street does harm? But recently there was a comment by an educator that has started into developing in children a sense of imagination. Now, a child that has watched and has been raised on a steady diet of television doesn't have to use their imagination. When you listen to radio, as most of you did as young children, you had a word picture presented to you, and you visualized all kinds of glorious scenes and events taking place. Today, it comes to them in living color. So why stimulate the imagination?
And yet, one could argue on the other side of that, that the stimulation and the variety of stimuli give you many more things to work with in terms of knowing something about the world.
They do us, but do they to the young child that's just getting started?
Well, for a child to develop real sensitivity in developing language and the rest, he ought to be in a rich environment with all sorts of stimuli.
Dale,
you found that deprived individuals, you see, are at a disadvantage.
Right, all sorts of stimuli. If that stimuli is one, namely the television, then he is not getting all sorts of stimuli.
Dale, over here, Dale.
Another dimension on the Sesame Street. We've been talking about kind of a discounting of the value of television, which is kind of general in our society. If we begin to affirm it, the way we have Sesame Street, television takes on an authority. And kids begin, if we say Sesame is good, the television says so, pretty soon everything television says carries that authority.
Earlier this fellow has talked about, I believe it was about motivation, you had to have motivation, and Jerry talked about what do you want technology to do for you, and you talked about something in your opening remarks about the word that it is, rooted out of community or commune, communalism.
It's related to it.
And I want to pick up, I guess, what I would, only way I would respond, I'd respond to Jerry's, what do you want to do with it, by maybe trying to remember where we are. And basically where we are is in a country that ascribes to the ideals of a democratic, a liberal democratic tradition,
And to be concerned about it would be to be concerned about it just like the farmer would be concerned about the introduction of the subsidized railroad into his agricultural lands and the effect it would have on maximizing or minimizing his chances to achieve equal opportunity, take a step closer in that direction, to achieve economic or social justice. And in that area, then, when it gets down to those fundamentals, living in a society that's just finished 200 and starting on another few years, maybe, then's when I would probably become very much interested in what I want it to do. And I would be, I'd be very much concerned about then having to make very personal value judgments about how, why, what is the need for getting down to the process of regulating, thinking about how it's going to affect and help a majority of our society locked in urban centers to get the through this communications mediums that exist to be able to come through these mediums to achieve some kind of a chance to have an opportunity and to then be able to use this medium to maximize on individual liberty and happiness and life and freedom, exclusive of your personal religious convictions. And then that's when I would become involved. Other than that, you know, that's the imperative for me, for the response. Other than that, then I would be unconcerned about it as maybe being a revolution here or now or whatever your organ and company has that allows you to play around with it as a, another gadget, how it's going to affect me in the future. But if it's going to hurt little children, if it's going to bully up on them and beat them up through the legislature by way of the corporate structure, selling it to the legislature as a quickie device, then I would be concerned about how it would keep people crushed and down and trodden.
Tom?
Nigel brought up a good point there, and something that scares me a little bit, because we talk about gatekeepers are regulating, and I interpret that as putting controls in there to make sure nobody can regulate it. Because I think the worst thing that can happen is that somebody tells us what can or cannot be communicated over this new technology. I mean, look at the radio stations now and the TV stations with the FCC. You know, telling what kind of programs they can show, and every year they fill out their annual report saying, you know, this is what we've done for society and all this sort of stuff, when the purpose of the FCC was to make sure that no two stations were on the same frequency.
Right.
And, you know, how can we prevent this type of regulation? So that's my interpretation of a gatekeeper, is somebody to make sure that nobody does regulate it, and we do have a truly free communication, and whether the regulator is, you know, a super monopoly business or a government agency, I think that's what we've got to prevent, so that there's some sort of a free market regulation over this.
Yeah, but the question of freedom, I think, is getting a little bit... you're talking about technological freedom, not human freedom. I mean, there's a difference between saying to someone out on a piece of land, you have free to do whatever you want. There's a big difference in that, and then giving that person a fleet of bulldozers and saying you can do whatever you want. The difference is the technology. So the regulations that we have are based upon regulating the technology. We wouldn't need the FCC if we didn't have the technology. So we are in the problem now because of advanced technology, because it puts so much power, potentially, in the hands of so few. You know, what do you do with it? I mean, you can't simply say, well, people have the personal freedom to go on out and speak any way they want. Yes, people do, but we're talking about a technology speaking. Just like a person has a right to use their land, but when they have a fleet of bulldozers or a factory that can produce chemicals that, because of the technology, that can affect the whole environment, that's a whole different ballgame.
Well, I don't think so at all. I mean, you know, private property we didn't always have with us. That at one time was a relatively new concept.
But the point I'm making is because of advances in technology, you're going to have more regulations to regulate the technology.
It brings me to the question of who the gatekeepers are going to be. Okay. And that's what I really wonder about, because my hunch is that if a technological device develops, all kinds of people that can see ways to make money off of it are immediately going to think of ways to incorporate it into the economy. And then who are the gatekeepers? There were no gatekeepers for television. I mean, there are in a sense, but television could have taken a whole different tack than it had.
Next big sweep is going to be video disc, and there's no gatekeepers there that I can see. Well, there are, but they're basing all the decisions about video disc on the same things were used on television. They're assuming the market's going to be the same way. And they're assuming that because as they test the market, as they look it around, they're getting the same reactions as they get from people that want to watch television.
Yeah, but the gatekeeper is the guy who puts the stuff on the video disc.
Right.
And what you allow on the air.
A gatekeeper could also say, we don't need that. I mean, China did that with medicine. When China was in the process of a revolution and Rockefeller Foundation went in and said, we'll build you a super advanced technological medical building. And they did it, and China looked at it and said, this is fine, but it's only going to help a few people. We don't want it. They shut it down, said thank you, wrote them a thank you letter, and said, we don't need that for our society now. And we have no gatekeepers that I can see who want to say that.
Yeah, no, we have.
Who wants them?
Like, maybe the thing for a gatekeeper to say is, yeah, that's a technique
But we do have gatekeepers. That's what's scary, is that somebody is making decisions about what goes on video discs.
There's no
somebody is. Somebody's making decisions about what books to publish and what television programs,
and
all the media.
It's scary. Get I get really frightened.
It's not a question of whether there should be gatekeepers or not. There are. I mean, somebody, you get a big technology and somebody's going to make, or some process is going to make decisions.
You read the history of technological development, it seems to me that there's an inevitability that as you become more technically complicated, the more there is central control, because that's necessary for it to work. And if you read Lewis Monk, you can go all the way back to the Egyptian civilization. And his analysis is that the pharaoh was created as a deity, in a sense, to control.
Right.
And then man became part of a mega machine. It's even more complicated today. Mm-hmm. How many of us really are free, in a sense, in the way we're talking about it?
Mm-hmm.
And that we're not controlled by somebody else. There are many avenues in our life where we're controlled, whether we like it or not.
It's a good book. I think there might be a good book on this. I'm only halfway through, by George Cabot Lodge, The American, New American Ideology. Has anyone read that? I haven't finished it yet. But he attacks this whole question. Goes back and looks at the basis of what our American ideologies are based on, and then looks at the disparity between what we're doing today and what John Locke said about private property, and how there really isn't much private property anymore. You know, the big ownership of property is by corporations, and there's nobody there that really owns it. It's a sort of a myth. I wish I'd gotten to the end of it by this thing, because he ended up with the word communitarianism. I just thought of that. Sort of hits off of your word, which is sort of a synthesis of all kinds of things, I guess. I guess I better go and read that book. I've got it with me. It's well recommended, highly recommended anyway, by a lot of people.
Okay,
maybe it's about time to go to the sound. It's
Sam, one more comment here.
Mine was a question. Does the new technology, does it allege to have improved or will improve upon a conversation or communication between two individuals face to face?
Yes.
Did you understand?
Sometimes.
I would say that it would say that. But what I have the danger in, it would say, yes, the communication mode is more personal.
Yeah.
And what would happen, though, is the word personal would also become redefined more to fit the media. That's what I worry about. I mean, the most personal way of communicating is to sit there eye to eye, and there's no any intermediate is going to cut that down.
Cannot you and I communicate best just face to face, eye to eye?
Well, I think that if that is replaced too much in our society, then I think communication declines. I would say that.
I don't think
there's anything technology can.
Is that recognized by technology or corporations or?
It depends on the user. The people can, individually it might work out better not to work face to face. It all depends on the situation. And it's the creativity of the user, the gatekeeper again. That's a hard question to answer.
Dick, at the beginning, you know, you said that these things were going to come.
Yep.
And I'm wondering now why, you know, was that because of this sort of this inertia thing that, you know, because we've got the technology, it's going to come? Is it what Dave was saying?
Yeah, the technology is here. The people that are in power are going to have it happen. And that's politicians, business leaders.
Well, it seemed to me, too, that the appeal of it is this huge amount of information. This place here is kind of funny when you work here, because there are so few things that stay still that sometimes some little question will come up to make a decision, and I very loosely and casually one day said, well, it would be nice to know everything. If I knew everything, then I can, you know, I can make the right decision. And then, you know, and then that, but that's what it is, right? You know, then I'm God, I'm in control. I wonder if that's maybe the appeal too. I mean, obviously, no one is pushing anything down on us that we aren't in some way, you know, taking maybe behind our back what we're taking.
Right.
There must be something in it, you know, or a promise of something. You know, and I wonder if that's it.
Control is one. I mean, that is a high value in technology. You are to control events to meet specified goals. And the element of control is there as an ideal. But I'm not so sure that fits in with the concept of freedom.
Well, we sure didn't answer the questions, but I guess we're a little bit better aware of the thing. And I think that in the next year, there's going to be an awful lot of written about this. It's going to be a very popular subject in everything from the Reader's Digest to the Scientific American. And maybe next year we can come back and look at what happened. I think there'll be some breakthroughs, especially decisions made by Congress.